welcome to another Keel Hauled podcast. I'm your host, Captain Logan, and we've got a lot of Sea of Thieves news to cover today. So tie yourselves to the mast and hold fast. Ahoy there, pirates. I hope you yourselves a good week and a good weekend. I know I did. This week, we have a lot to talk about. Season 12 is live. I've got thoughts on all of the things that we got with this season. I think it's going to be a really fun time talking about some of the things that I had some really different opinions on what's happened. And harpoons are the best thing in the world right now. So let's get into it. But before we get into any of that, I have to thank the patrons. They are the ones that took care of the Podbean bill that came in today. I noticed this weekend I got the invoice from that, and the Patreon funds came in this month to help take care of that. I also am still slowly paying off the tickets and flights and hotel for Fest of Legends. So I really appreciate the help that is coming in from that. I do want to remind everyone just to double check your payments on stuff, because I did notice a couple didn't go through properly. And patrons had some weird stuff going on recently where they've been dropping people's access. And I just want to make sure that you're all getting the access that you are paying for with the Patreon. So make sure that if you have any questions, just hit me up, let me know. I'll try and help out as much as I possibly can. So I do want to thank everyone that is with me, though. So thank you to Adorabold, Elcute, Balls, Blue Turtle V1, Captain Chonky, Captain Hayes, Captain Longsharts, Chateau Noof, Super Pack, Zombie Killer, Cloud, Cosmic Johnson, Static Mirror, Davram TV, El Jefe Esteban, Fergatron, Godhammer 6, Jorby Jorbs, J Hood, Carl Embo, Kazia the Aficionado, Cryptic Slayer, Lumpy SRQ, Evil Morpheus, Space Admiral Oars, Xbox Mike 29, Murphy Lives, Mutinous Max, Norwegian, Registella the Brony Pirate, Replicated Flame, Rustbelt Kid, Skamelt 666, Captain Dasm, Tommy D, TN Professor, Real Big Tuna, Big Bad Pad, Mina Fairy, Anthony N Jr., Captain J Rat of the Flaming Cold Sore, The Lore Chronologist Deadeye Dre, Hegger Owl, Jeff H, Captain Duckweed, Evil Martha, Peter Miller, Rooski Doo, Thor Von Blitz, Luke Lore the Insipid Ghost, and Zam Wow. Thank you all so much for your love, your support. It really does brighten my day every time I get to do this and just have a time to really appreciate the support that you're giving me. So thank you so much. With that, let's get into the episode, all right? With the start of season 12, we have a bunch of new tools in the sandbox, and I was not prepared for how much I was going to enjoy these. There's definitely ones that I'll say kind of, I knew they would be fun, but I didn't expect them to be that much fun. And there's some that I'm actually a little disappointed with. So if you're getting into Sea of Thieves and you're not quite sure what's going on, you're a brand new player, just know that some of these things that I'm going to be talking about are kind of fresh for everyone. So don't feel bad if you're not sure what they are or how to use them. But hopefully I can give you a little bit of insight about these. So first off, I want to talk about the double barrel pistol, because I think that is one of the weakest of the new items that we got in this update. And I'm kind of happy that it's not too overpowered. I'm actually kind of glad that it's a little bit weaker of a weapon, because I think it's going to be kind of niche. And the reason I say that is because this is very much like your standard pistol, but with having two barrels, it means that the firing is it's actually a little bit slower than reloading an Eye of Reach. The amount of damage that you can do with this is a little bit less than an Eye of Reach, but you have more opportunity to play with the actual number of shots that you can carry. So the double barrel pistol, I think this is going to be something that is, it's tough to say how this is going to play out. I think it'll play out better for folks that don't have precision reaction style, sniper shots, honestly. Each shot itself is 40% of a pirate's health. Together, both of them are 80% of a pirate's health, from what I've been told. I haven't gotten to do some testing with this yet, but that's the general consensus for most of the streamers that I've talked to, and people that have been watching the streamers test this kind of stuff. So the double barrel pistol actually has 6 shots. Every other weapon in the game that uses ammunition, which is, you know, pretty much all of them except for the sword, has 5 shots. The double barrel, given its nature, has 6 in this case. You can fire them in succession, or you can charge them up to do both barrels at the same time. With testing this, I have noticed that they aren't hitting directly dead center of where the actual barrels lie, as if you were to use a standard pistol with the iron sight, like the obsidian flintlock. Or no, is it Ebon? I can't remember. It's part of the Obsidian set, but it's the Ebon flintlock pistol, I believe, or the Mercenary pistol. I think there's a Silver Blade version of it, as well as the Crimson Viper set. Needless to say, it's not going to be firing straight in the middle. You're going to be slightly off center for both barrels, which makes sense given the nature of the design of the gun. But I think that this gives you an opportunity to play around with having as much or almost as much damage as equipping an Eye of Reach without necessarily being beholden to the accuracy that's required with an Eye of Reach. Usually with an Eye of Reach, there's a decent amount of ADS or aim down sights that you need to use to be able to scope in. A lot of people are getting really good at quick scoping, which is, you know, it is a trained ability. You do have to practice a lot with that, and it's good to do so in my experience, just because of how powerful it is. But the double barrel pistol gives you range that you normally wouldn't be able to get with a sword or a blunderbuss. Like you're probably going to be guaranteed more damage than a blunderbuss at range, but you do sacrifice range and you do sacrifice power than say like an Eye of Reach or pistol. So it's slightly between a blunderbuss and a pistol, in my opinion. Pistol having 2 shots, or 1 shot that is 50% of a pirate's health. Eye of Reach obviously doing 90%. Blunderbuss with all 10 pellets, 10% at each pellet, 100%. But you have to be at pretty close range to be able to make sure that all 10 of those hit, which is why most people typically run Eye of Reach and a blunderbuss. You know, if you're shooting at a range, the likelihood of hitting someone with a with an Eye of Reach shot and guarantees that they have 90% health taken away. You get 10%. You have a fairly good percentage firing a blunder right after that. At least 1 or 2 of those shots should hit and register, guaranteeing the kill. Most people typically, I would say, probably run that because the blunderbuss itself, very powerful. And that's kind of where the double pistol lies, is it's slightly between a flintlock and a blunderbuss. It does do a decent amount of damage, but I think that the reload time, given that it's at or slower than an Eye of Reach, it doesn't quite do as much damage as an Eye of Reach with both charges, and you do have to waste some time kind of charging it up, something I think that they might want to do some testing on to see, like, if people are using it and how much time to kill is wasted with trying to charge up the double pistol, because the double barrel pistol, because I do believe that if it were a little less clunky, typically what I do if I'm planning on doing a charged shot with that is, instead of you using the ADS or the aim down sights for the charge or before I charge, I usually reload, hold down the trigger so that I get that charge. And then that frees me from having to think about like the slow that comes with ADSing down the barrel. And that gives me the opportunity. Now, the trouble is that I can fire those shots and they'll go off and they'll hit dead center on wherever I'm aiming, but the trouble is that there's no reticle, right? And I've seen, I put up a throwing knife video. I've seen a lot of folks talk about putting something on their screen to help indicate where the center is. I've seen people talk about, like, you know, using an overscreen or an on-screen overlay that comes with a lot of monitors to be able to identify where the center is if there's no reticle. Those are all good tools for people that want to have that bit of a helping hand. But most people, I would argue. Probably not going to go to that trouble of doing it. And even larger group of those players most likely are playing on TVs where that's not something that is very common with TVs. Something I think a lot of PC players don't take into account. So when you're charging up your double barrel pistol, you can charge it up before you actually aim down sights. And that does tend to help, in my opinion, a little bit with mobility. But it is a very clunky weapon, in my opinion, at the moment. That could change. But for the time being, I think that given that you have two shots at 40% that are faster than reloading a flintlock or a blunderbuss, you can, if you hit both shots, there's a good chance that you're going to do a pretty decent amount of damage and be able to get some kills in that way. But at the moment, I still don't think that it is as powerful due to the versatility that it offers. I think that there are stronger tools right now in the meta that take this and say, okay, if we didn't have a flintlock pistol, this would be a great flintlock pistol. And it would be, honestly, feels kind of in line with, you know, piracy or like, I would say like Hollywood video or Hollywood movie pirates. You know, you've seen like the double pistol kind of scenario. But at the moment, I think it's good. If I had to give it a rating, I'd probably give it like a 6 out of 10 on like a 10-point scale compared to the other weapons. Obviously, I'm looking at like the sword and the blunderbuss is probably like 10 out of 10. I have reached probably like a 9 out of 10. Flintlock is probably like a solid 8. Not quite sure where I'm at on the throwing knife yet, but let's get into the throwing knife. So the throwing knives are very interesting. There's a lot that I've seen with these that suggests that this may end up being a potentially very strong weapon in the meta. Right now, throwing knives, you can throw two knives in succession, and each one of them, I can't quite recall the damage that they do. I wish I could remember offhand. I know stabbing is about 20%. I want to say that throwing is 60%, if I recall. And if that's a little bit wrong, please forgive me for this because I'm trying to do some of this off the top of my head while I'm scrubbing through like chats to try and find the information. But I do think that given how fast you can actually throw the throwing knives, if your accuracy is good and you're in a close enough range, that is the other trick too, is that not only is the double barrel pistol have a pretty fast drop off, the throwing knives as well have a pretty fast drop off when it comes to how long before they just fall to the ground, right? And so there, I would consider these far more close combat weapons than something like an Eye of Reach or a flintlock pistol, because those two actually do have quite a long range before the bullet actually starts to dip due to gravity. And that being said, the best way to really utilize the throwing knives is when you're actually doing person-to-person combat on a ship. I wouldn't really recommend these if you're trying to fire over to another crew. You know, you're really not going to do very well at utilizing that. But just in general, you can actually two-shot a pirate fairly quickly if you're good at throwing the knives. One of the biggest issues with the throwing knives themselves is that right now, the best way to aim with them is by not equipping a hook. If you have a hook, you're kind of at a disadvantage because you don't have a good gauge for where the knife is going to go. Because if you're using your hand, what you end up doing is you end up holding your left hand out, and with your index finger and your thumb, you create a sort of line at the tips of your fingers. And wherever you're holding your hand, about an inch or two above where your index finger ends, is where the knife will actually go until that point where they actually have that gravity, that bullet drop happens. So you can actually pretty accurately estimate where a knife will be or where a knife will hit before that decay if you're not wearing a hook. Now, if you're wearing a hook, unfortunately, most of the hooks all look different. So they're all going to have slightly different distances from where the end of the hook is and where the knife is actually going to land. And this is kind of where the conversation about on-screen reticles through monitors or tape or what, you know, whatever you want to put on your screen comes into the discussion. Something I personally have messed around with in the past, but genuinely don't really like. I don't like having something that will forever be stuck on my screen. I've always been just someone who prefers to have a reticle on my screen when I'm shooting guns, but given the nature of Sea of Thieves and the time period that they've set this in and the amount of realism that they've tied to these types of mechanics, it would make sense that there wouldn't be a HUD to display where the actual thing is going to go. Very much in the same way that, you know, we use iron sights and glass bottles with cracks in them to cheat around the idea of having a reticle. And because of that, I think Sea of Thieves is actually done fairly well when it comes to combat. I think it's a very smart decision in that case. It feels like it really is more immersive in that sense. But when you're playing with the throwing knife, given the nature of the actual throwing knife and the amount of damage that it does, it's good to have an idea of where that's going to go. Now, granted, in Sea of Thieves, pirates have normalized hitboxes. There's no critical spots on them that you have to worry about, so headshots don't matter. Likewise, the damage that you deal to someone is the same across all pirates in all shapes. It doesn't matter what shape their pirate is. They could be the skinniest pirate, and they will have the same hitbox as the fattest pirate, or the tallest versus the shortest, which, again, that always kind of goes back to the idea of when you're attacking a pirate and they're doing something weird, your instinct is to aim at their body. Well, if their body is doing a weird emote and glitching and crawling, or, you know, like skirting along the top of a ship, and, you know, you can't really tell where they are because they're squatted down, you tend to look down and try and fire at them that way. I don't know if the emote bug that they do, it does actually mess with the boxes too, so that could be something where it legitimately needs to be something where you aim down low. But most of the time when you're fighting a pirate, regardless of where you hit them, you're doing the same amount of damage across all of the body, which is nice because it at least gives you that chance that if you don't have the best precision or the best tracking when it comes to attacking someone, and you're trying to follow them to be able to hit them with an actual projectile, having normalized boxes without critical spots, it tries to even the battle a lot more than you normally would had there be, like, you know, no scope critical headshots that just absolutely kill you with one shot, things like that. Blunderbusses are already something that kind of messes with that formula, but the blunderbuss itself has a lot of trade-offs to try and ensure that it's not as overpowered as people want it to be. But right now, the throwing knife, fantastic. I did not expect this to be something that would work really well. I didn't like the idea of how the mechanic was going to work. But the thing that I've noticed is I've really enjoyed having daggers stowed in parts of the ship around, like, you know, like ladders, masts, things like that, wheels on top of the banisters, in case I want to get extra ammo afterwards, because for whatever reason, whenever you reload, the ones that you've thrown don't always disappear. Sometimes they do. I haven't quite worked that out. I think it's based on the number of times you throw a projectile. They will slowly start to fade away as you replace them with putting new things in spots that you're throwing them at. So I'm not quite sure how that exactly works. The stab and the heavy strike for the throwing knives, I do feel is... The heavy stab is pretty good. It's not too bad. It is high damage, but it's not like a one shot kill, and you do have to charge it up, and you do have to be in close proximity to your target. The stab itself is very light. It's a little bit lighter than I believe the sword attack is, but it is much faster. So I haven't quite seen the data from anyone kind of testing out, you know, how long it takes to kill an Ashen Lord with a sword versus a stabbing with a dagger. So I'm sure some mad lad out there will probably work all of that out. And kudos to them, because I think it'll be a boon to the community in general to have that kind of knowledge, the way we had sales kind of worked out as far as like wind speeds and stuff. But at the moment, I would argue that it is faster to kill someone from 1 to 0, or from, you know, 100% to 0% with 2 throwing knives than any other combination of weapon. Just for whatever reason, the throwing knife, not only is it faster to throw 2 knives than it is to reload any weapon, but if you actually grab like an ammo pouch, or you go and get your ammo refilled from one of the chests, your knives are immediately available. There is no wait to reload a gun, which kind of kills, to me at least, any reason to use a pistol or a double barrel pistol. Those two weapons become extremely obsolete given the amount of damage that you can get from throwing knives, and the decreased time it takes to not only throw, but to replenish your ammo with those. So I think those may be something that Rare takes a look at, depending on how hard it is for players to have to deal with this. They may look to try and balance it a little bit. But if they do that, there's a good chance they run the risk of killing the weapon for any kind of use and pushing people to just continue to use the old faithfuls that have been around since the beginning of the game. I hope that players are able to find a way to use both the double barrel pistol and the throwing knife in interesting ways that we typically wouldn't expect. I've already seen some pretty awesome plays with them, and just been very impressed with how much fun it is. Currently, I think my favorite game to play when I'm waiting to get from one island to another, between like mission steps, is to stand on the back of the canopy on a sloop. I will aim up into the air as I'm like getting ready to actually like throw a knife. I will try to aim it over the mast, and what I try to do is I try to throw it, have it go up over the mast, and then hit into the tip of the bowsprit. So it's from one end of the ship to the other, and I'm trying to throw the knife up into the air and have it hit the very tip of the bowsprit. Takes some practice. It's definitely not an exact like thing to be able to work out at the moment for me. It's really just trial and error. But I have really enjoyed the nature of just throwing knives in general. It's actually been really fun. I was completely wrong about how well these were designed. And shout out to Andy Preston, who I believe was probably the one that was leading this. Knowing how much he enjoys Call of Duty, I would not be surprised if they tried to get that feel as best they could, because I think that there's definitely a lot of love and effort put into the throwing knives because of that. Next on today's docket, let's talk about bone collars. I really love bone collars. They are harder to find in the world than other items at the moment, compared to, you know, like cursed cannonballs, blunder bombs, fire bombs, that kind of thing, you know, chain shot. But these are really good, like really, really good. Like the bone collar itself, once you throw these onto a ship or onto an island, you know, wherever you're throwing them. I haven't thrown them on a megalodon yet, but I'm definitely thinking that should be a thing as well too. But if the best way to kind of, because there's a whole bunch of commendations to work on killing things with, or killing specific enemies with specific types of new weapons that we've got. One of them is having bone collar skeletons kill phantoms. And to be honest, the best way to go about this is to try and get some that you can, head over to one of the sea forts, which are the Spanish emplacements, and actually use the bone collars on those to, because they're all phantoms and they all count. So that's honestly the best way to go for that. One of the easier ones to actually complete, in my opinion. Some of the harder ones are more like using a double barrel pistol to kill an Ashen Lord, using a throwing knife to kill a Skeleton Lord. Like, those ones are just like, are you're kidding, right? Like, I don't know how many times it's going to take to kill these. So I'm like sitting here trying to like just use the same weapon over and over and over and over again to hopefully one of these shots will actually be the killing blow. But the bone collars, man, they're a throwable. There's some lore tied to these. If you don't know, Tasha, for all intents and purposes, has most of her body healed. There's still kind of questions about one of her hands still being a skeleton hand, but they are using the corrupted Sword of Souls along with Tasha's parents, who were in the Pirate Legend Tavern, her memory as well as their memory of her, to use in conjunction with the corrupted Sword of Souls to manifest the memories of when Tasha was normal and not cursed. And I'll be perfectly honest, I don't like the way the lore is going with this. Briggsy's gone. I'm not sure what Briggsy's up to. But with the Dark Brethren Court losing interest in the fortress and the Sea of the Damned and whatever potential item there was in there that could have saved Briggs or saved Tasha from the curse and reverted her back to human, which would then have been used as a bargaining chip against Flameheart. That's all gone. That whole amazing storyline that I was genuinely waiting for. That's all kaput. Still don't know what's going on with Pendragon. Still don't know what's going on with DeMarco. Is he coming back? What's happening there? I thought his dog was dead. Doesn't make sense. But that's the state of the story at the moment. We're just kind of like sweeping it under the rug and hoping that mom doesn't check to see when we say that we went ahead and cleaned the floor, that she doesn't look under the rug where we swept all of the unfinished storylines to start something fresh. I have lots of thoughts on that, but none of it's as positive as I think this episode wants to be. So I'm not going to derail an entire podcast that I'm very happy to get into for choices made with the lore. But needless to say, there's some weird stuff going on. But the point of this was to talk about the cursed cannonball that was given to Briggsy by the Dark Brethren Court to have near Tasha, who is the tavern keep in Ancient Spire Outpost, who was cursed to be turning into a skeleton and prevent her from completely changing until such time as we go to the Sea of the Damned with Briggsy to be able to obtain some sort of artifact from a ancient fortress that was manifested through their memories where they sailed off and left the Sea of Thieves for. That was a sentence. That cursed cannonball has now been handed off to Wanda with an O, who is the weaponsmith over at Port Merrick, formerly New Golden Sands Outpost, formerly Golden Sands Outpost. And this is one that I think actually does, unfortunately, not feel good. And shout out to Captain MacGuffin and Deadeye Dre. Very adamant about the storyline, very adamant about the lore and the continuity that has been in place since the inception of the game, with the books, the comics, the audiobooks that they've put out, the adventures that we've had. Everything has always felt like there has been an answer to a question that we may not get right away, but will eventually get. And in one of the adventures, it was made very clear to us by Wanda with an O, who's the sister of the lead person for the Dark Brethren Court, which is not the captain at the moment, but Wanda with an A, a.k.a. the Warsmith, who was the original weaponsmith at Golden Sands Outpost, who then turned into a skeleton captain, got her own fleets, created her own cursed cannonballs, wreaked havoc in the first year of Sea of Thieves, and then disappeared for quite some time until eventually found Flameheart Jr. as a skeleton, created the Reaper's hideout, created the Reaper's bones, left Flameheart because of the unrequited love from him, and then created her own group of misfits to try and take the Sea of Thieves for themselves. Anyway, so this cursed cannonball is now with Wanda with an O. I have to make that distinction because most people will think of the Warsmith as the Warsmith, less and more Wanda with an A, who had railed against the use of cursed cannonballs because of what it did to her sister. Makes sense. You lose your sister. She turns into a skeleton, goes stark raving mad, in love with a crazy, tyrant who's trying to take over the Sea of Thieves with no real care about what happens to the actual Sea of Thieves once he's got it, to keep piracy, piracy for all eternity, which if you murder everyone kind of removes the whole point of pirating things from people because you have it all and there's no opposition. So I don't know if he's really thought that one through. But Wanda with an O has the cursed cannonball. As such, has made the bone collars. The bone collars are throwable. The power to call upon dead skeletons or dead pirates in the form of skeletons who will then become your loyal crew member. You can only have one bone collar per person active in some sort of thing. Doesn't matter, skeleton fort, island, ship, wherever you throw it, that's where three skeletons will spawn. Each will have their own unique name. Each will be green bars for you. They will look as friendlies. And as far as I can tell, they last about 30 seconds before they despawn. So they're not indefinite, which is, that's fine, whatever. I wouldn't mind having them be something that you could enlist to be on your crew. Like if I was a solo player, hear me out. If I was a solo player and I wanted to play on a galleon, I could spawn a galleon in, I could grab a bone collar, I could throw it onto the top deck of the galleon, and bada bing, bada boom, you got yourself a full galleon crew without having to rely on other people to man it. They would work the sails, they would work the cannons, they would work the repairs, you would helm, however you wanted to split it up, set a waypoint on the map, have the captain sail you there. You focus on cannoning, repelling invaders, bucketing, whatever task needs to get done, you work your way into that task while the other three skeletons help assist with the maintenance and stuff. Like they obviously aren't going to go onto the island with you to like kill everything, because you could just sit back and pretend like you're a necromancer from Diablo 4. That's not what I want. But I do think that there would be a place and potential to train players on larger crews. And I think I've had this conversation with folks in the past about having ships that are manned by NPCs to help give players a sense of what it's like to play on larger ships if they can't find people that they're comfortable playing with, whether it be open crew, closed crew, Discord people, whatever. They don't feel comfortable. They want to play on the bigger ships. They can't at the moment because there's no NPCs that will actually help maintain a ship. But there now are bone callers who can path around and actually attack enemies and stuff like that. So I think the potential is there. It's just a time question at this point. But I really like the idea that the bone callers are a way to distract. I've seen some fantastic plays where people use them on enemy crews to distract from guarding ladders or from repairing a mast or a helm, from getting an anchor up, to firing cannons or trying to harpoon someone. Like they are extremely good diversions for distractions for players who are attempting to try and sink other ships. And I really love that because it forces you to break out of the mindset that there are only two ladders to get onto a ship. And that doesn't even take into account one of the other things that I want to talk about this episode. So very happy to see these. I think they are very nice. I'm good with the spawn rate, though at the moment they say that bone collars can be recovered from crates left behind by defeated skeleton fleets and found in barrels in skeleton forts. Lore wise, that is a very precarious thing to set up, because the sea forts and the skeleton fleets are under the control of varying skeleton lords. Most of the fleets, as far as I understand it, are still beholden to the Warsmith and her ilk. Skeleton forts themselves, I have to be very particular because there are sea forts in the game, but they are not the same as skeleton forts. Skeleton forts, as far as I'm aware, are still tribute to the Gold Hoarder. So all still within the same Dark Brethren faction, if you can call it that, but not necessarily beholden to the same leaders. Like, each leader is just a part of the Dark Brethren court, but their skeletons are very particular about who they serve, if that makes sense. So it's weird to me that Wanda with an O, over at Port Merrick, formerly New Golden Sands Outpost, formerly Golden Sands Outpost, the home of Wanda with an A, aka the Warsmith, the original inventor of the cursed cannonballs and blunder bombs and fire bombs and stuff, as far as I can remember, is now creating these bone collars, but they are found in emplacements or on ships controlled by her sister and the Gold Hoarder. I can write this off in one sentence. These were found on the dead pirates' bodies by the skeletons serving these lords and placed them in these areas for safekeeping and research. That sentence alone writes off all issue for why these are found in the place that they're found. But that's not exactly like what was conveyed to us. So you have to build the headcanon around why we're finding them, where we're finding them, to accept or look past the questionable choices that were made in the lore aspects of why these were created or how they were created and where you find them. But I don't think that that is something that you should really let yourself get hung up on. Just enjoy this game for the sake of it being a game. That these are just tools thrown into the sandbox for you to try and figure out what you're going to do with the sand. Next, I want to talk about the Horn of Fair Winds. This is a weird one, because right now these are only going to be really found in shipwrecks or in places where the sunken kingdoms are. So like treasuries and shrines, right? They're not a very high spawn rate. And I understand the reason for that. They are very powerful. But at the moment, it is a commendation to complete that requires you to turn in, I believe, 250 of these. And to try and find 250 of these is kind of like asking you to find 50 to 100 of the box of wondrous secrets. It's maybe not quite an equal comparison, but the effort required to obtain one of these Horn of Fair Winds is a lot. And I honestly feel like most people will probably find these from shipwrecks, but I still have yet to actually play with one. And I haven't seen any tests done with them as far as speed tests go. Unfortunately, it doesn't feel like I've really seen anyone doing any kind of sea of science to figure out how much faster it makes you go. But I'm sure that data will probably get worked out by people who are able to find it and work with another crew to be able to test it. But right now, it is a very interesting tool. Not only can you troll people by continuously repelling someone from their ship, if you get on board and you have a horn of fair winds, if you get them knocked off in the first place, every time they climb the ladder, you can hit them with the horn and they fly off the side of the ship, effectively preventing them from being able to get back onto their ship. Outside of that, the fact that it loses value the more you use it, I think is a positive way to try and prevent people from overusing it or using it so much that it's just something you find and then you use forever. I think the 250, again, a very high number that doesn't really serve much purpose in my mind, especially given that the Midnight Prowler set is tied behind some of these longer commendations, which was the old arena set that was intended to come into the game at some point. It never did. A lot of people wanted the Midnight Prowler set, and now it's coming to the game, but as far as I can tell, it's all tied behind some of these harder commendations to unlock. So you got to work for it. And to be honest, you had to work for it back in the day too, but you know, becoming in a region or being able to use those in arena, you had to play a lot of arena as well too and get lucky with the ship that you spawned in on. So I can definitely understand folks' frustrations given the spawn rate and the nature of trying to find these to get them turned in. I think the best tips that I've heard from Caleb right now is that people are getting to Shipwreck Bay. There's the Shrine of, it's like Unsatiable Hunger, or it's like it's the one where you just go straight to the bottom and it's a bunch of sharks. I remember what it was. They're using the tall tale of the Seabound Soul. They're diving to that. They are going to the shrine, diving down, seeing if it's there. If it's not, they dive to another Seabound Soul, go to Shipwreck Bay. They will then go check the shrine on the new server and try and find it there as well too. That seems to be the trick that everyone's using right now to try and find and farm up as many of these as you possibly can, because the spawn rate is extremely low on these, which, again, a bummer. I think it's more the pain of the 250 commendation that is causing this pain for people compared to just the fact that the spawn rate so low. If there wasn't a commendation tied to it and that has cosmetics tied to it that have been sought for a long time, I don't know that many people would care about the spawn rate. Very much in the same way that I don't think people care about the Box of Wondrous Secrets. If they find it, awesome. You get an easy 10K. If not, not a big deal. They don't really care. Next up, I wanted to talk about the harpoon tightropes and the island ziplines. These are some of the coolest parts of the game. I think they've done a fantastic job with the ziplines. I think they're fun. I think they definitely give you an opportunity to traverse the world in a more fun manner. And there are a bunch of commendations tied to using them, as well as the harpoon tightropes. Move aside from that. Let's actually talk about the harpoon tightropes. These are a game changer, an absolute game changer. It finally offers players an opportunity to get onto a ship in an expected fashion, but a non-conventional fashion. If someone harpoons your boat, you probably know it. Now that there are going to be pirates who actually have the ability to walk across the tightrope, which I got to do the other day. It was fantastic. Sunk a ship. It was amazing to be able to do that. Hit all my cannon shots. Caleb pulled around. I got a harpoon on him. I immediately hopped onto the harpoon, got onto their boat, dropped their anchor, killed the people aboard, and sank them. And that is an extremely satisfying thing to do. Let me tell you, like that, very few things in the game make you feel awesome when it comes to combat. This is one of those things that makes you feel awesome in combat, you know, like getting that one ball, getting a two chain shots off at the same time, kegging a ship by boarding them with the keg. Always feels awesome. Surviving the keg explosion to begin with and then sinking them afterwards feels awesome. Getting that perfect anchor ball and then just laying into a ship who is sailing directly into your broadside as they were planning to like ram and keg you. Those are like the same high that I get when I use a harpoon to harpoon another ship, and not just to bring them in, because there's less need to do that now, but to actually board them via a tightrope walk, which puts you at risk. Because not only do you have to balance, but you have to continue to move across it. And if both ships are moving, that can actually be a tough situation, because if they move too far, then the tightrope will fall and you're left in the water. Additionally, you can't fire a weapon when you're on your tightrope, which means that you're at the mercy of the combat. And if the other enemy pirates are able to shoot you, then that was a lost opportunity. And they then may be able to use the tightrope from the harpoon to then board your ship. And with you being dead, if you have another crew member, or if you have other crew members that aren't as strong in PvP, because obviously you're the one going over to board, it's a double-edged blade at that point. You got to really think about that. First off, helm, if you're at the helm and something goes wrong with the harpoon and they start to use it against you, I would urge you to have blunder bombs on you all the time, just so that you can try and huck one at the harpoon and see if that damage is enough to break the tether. Because if it is, you're golden. You don't have to think about it. And I actually should probably go test this at some point, because I actually don't know if a blunder bomb could do that. I don't think you can shoot the harpoon, but it's going to be a lot quicker. The throwing knife might do it as well too. Haven't tested that out, but those are things that I would say try and figure out, like a way that you can actually, as the helm, because you're probably going to be farther away from the harpoon as a result, to be able to find a way to disconnect that tether if that scenario happens. If they kill your crewmate and they start to board that tightrope, find a way to cut that line, man, because it'll put them in the water and you can get time for your crewmate to get back from the ferry. But I really love these. I think they're brilliant. I think that they've thought hard about how they want to implement these. There's obviously an angle or a certain degree of angle when you're firing these to go up them, that will not permit you from being able to use them. You can't go anything that's too steep. I love that. I think it's a makes sense. You can use them to slide down as well. So if you are up somewhere high and someone wants to actually like go up somewhere to be able to grab a piece of treasure or something like that, if it can't quite get the harpoon, they can at least run up there if it's feasible. I really love this as a way to get to and from places. No longer am I jumping in the water when I am boarding a sea fort or one of the emplacements for the, what are they called? Caleb just finished his 100th, but it's the Athena Veil Voyage. That last little thing where you go up onto the top of the destroyed emplacement to gather up all the loot. To be able to like harpoon back onto your boat. Using the harpoon to get up to there as opposed to jumping in the water or sword lunging onto the bottom of the actual stairwells and then run up the stairs to get up there. Such a good thing. Oh my God, it's so satisfying. It feels so much better to actually traverse the world this way. And I love that you can do this with the harpoons that are just out in the world. So harpoon rowboats, harpoons on the sovereigns, you can do this as well too. I believe Caleb and I had used a harpoon to get up to the top of the sovereigns, and then we used a harpoon from sovereigns to get up to the top of where the tavern is on Ancient Spire Outpost, and then we used the zip line from the top of the outpost down to the dock to go like to the shipwright. So traversal has just fundamentally changed in Sea of Thieves as a result of the zip lines and tightropes with the harpoons. And it's so much more fun to be able to get around the world and see, like, can I go an entire session without falling in the water? Who's going to be the first pirate legend to never touch water? Those are some of the things that were like popping into my head while I was sailing around this weekend, having fun talking with people about how different the world is. It was already nice that the harpoons were put into the game. The fact that you could harpoon loot and then pick it off the actual harpoon was a game changer. Changed how we play the game in general. Then Rare decided, no, that's not good enough. Now the loot will actually auto drop every time you harpoon a piece. So you don't have to have two people manning the harpoon. That was fantastic. Now the harpoons are a form of traversal on top of all the other stuff that they do. And hands down, next to cannons, there isn't a more important tool on a ship than the harpoon. I would argue that the most important tool on the ship is the harpoon because of how much you utilize it in the world nowadays. Nobody ever uses the anchor. Nobody touches the anchor. It's only when you actually have your anchor drop that you care about it. Cannons, very much a big must. Have to have them, have to use them. But they're very restricted on what they are able to do. I'll get into scattershot soon. So those probably most powerful, maybe second most powerful. If we're trying to build out a tier list here of the tools, you know, nobody really cares about the helm. Nobody really cares about sails, flags, things like that. So brig, what's a brig? No one even thinks about what a brig is. Brig is a ship. It's not a thing you put people in anymore. So I really love what they've done with these harpoons. I think that they're great. I think that it would be a real shame if they stopped working the way they do, because being able to jump up from a high thing and hit the right button at the right time as you're landing on the tightrope, and then being able to use that to continue traversing in an instant, not like a, not something that is takes time or is finicky, but in instant, you can register the fact that you're on the harpoon rope and that you can walk across it. That is by far perfect execution of those. I think they've done a really good job with those. I think that kind of brings me to the scattershot. You know, we started with the double barrel pistol, which I think was the weaker of the pirate-based weapons. And we are ending with the scattershot, which is the new type of cannonball. You can find these in storage barrels across the seas, providing players an opportunity to use a short-range type of cannonball that has four shots that shoot outward. The how they shoot is completely random. I have not been able to find a way to predict like how these are going to land, and they spread pretty quickly. These are going to be something that, in my opinion, you're going to have to be real flipping close, real flipping close to a ship for this to be effective. I think I was using a couple when I was helping Caleb hit me up when he was working on his last like three Legend of the Veil voyages. And he hit me up right before I was about to go out to see The Fall Guy, which is a fantastic movie, and needed help sinking a crew. It was bugging him. It was a duo sloop, not a big deal. I get in there, and I noticed when we got in that at one point I was like hitting them with a couple shots, and I wanted to see how the scatter shot worked. So I fired a couple of them at the crew. And while these only do a tier one compared to the tier twos that a normal cannonball will do, or a tier three if you repeatedly hit the same area with a standard cannonball, the tier one spread for these scatter shots is it's really hard to justify the cannon, because there's not really a good guarantee unless you're super close that you're going to even hit with two of the cannonballs. And if you hit with two of the cannonballs, you've effectively done one cannonball's worth of damage. There's an opportunity for you to get three hits, and all four is nigh impossible at any decent range. You're gonna have to be effectively point blank, or you know, if you can jump on the ship, there's a chance that all four will probably hit. But I liked that this is an option, because when you are fighting another crew, you can get some really effective shots in just standard cannonballs, right? You can use some blunder bombs, some fire bombs, maybe a bone collar, or some phantom balls, or the screamers to be able to do some heavy damage. But it really does come down to the need to overwhelm your opponent so that they don't have time to triage shots or holes in the ship. Like if there's two tier threes, you want to get as many tier ones in the ship to make up for them repairing that one tier three. And that's where if you get in close with scatter shots, you can do that. I like the fact that scatter shots can deal multiple tier one damages to different parts of the ship. So I'm okay with a tier one hitting the hull if another one hits the mast, because that's one part of the mast that I have less to worry about. One chain shot can then take down a sloop mast, or maybe another effectively like reducing the amount of time, or one hit onto the helm. can do a lot for the maneuverability of a ship compared to if you only got one cannonball, one standard cannonball shot into the hull or onto the mast, right? So the scanner shot itself is going to be a very niche item, probably about as niche as cursed cannonballs, because at long range, the likelihood of you being able to do much with them is going to be low. I think the best time to be able to use these will most likely be when a skeleton ship first spawns on you and you immediately want to get some damage in on them. Or maybe if you're doing like a ghost fleet and you need to clear out a bunch of ships that are all tightly packed together with the lead ship, having the scatter shot in that case might be a way to be able to get damage into the exterior ghost ships without having to sacrifice as much time reloading cannons, if that makes sense. So overall, I'm glad that it's a new tool. You only can carry five at a time, as far as I can recall. And I think that that is a fair assessment, given how many other alternatives we have to just standard cannonballs that will still be impactful in fights. So happy to see them in there. Will remain to be seen how effective they end up being, but definitely glad that we now have a new option when it comes to combat like that. All right, pirates, that was pretty much it as far as new tools that came into the game. I'm very happy with them. I think they've done a great job really showcasing like what they are and how they'll fit in. I think there's a good opportunity for us to kind of see, like, in the future coming down the line, how this will fall within the meta. And I fully anticipate that at some point where Rare might actually look to address spawn rates, damage, reload times, things like that. We'll have to wait and see how that all kind of works as we head out. One thing I'd be curious to know is if the bone callers will ever have a change in the style of skeletons that spawn, because at the moment I believe it's just three sword skeletons. I believe you could probably get away with two sword skeletons and a flintlock, or maybe a combination of all three. So we don't have Eye of Reach skeletons anymore, but that was a thing at a point. But if we had one blunder, one flintlock, and one sword skeleton as a way to kind of like boost the power of the bone callers, that would give us an opportunity to kind of like play around with the meta a little bit. I think they're addressing right now, they're trying to find out if they like the fact that the bone collar skeletons can actually, what's it called? They can sniff out or find tuckers. Personally, I think that's fine. These are rare enough and they're interesting enough that I think it's a tool that you really have to take into consideration when you're working on a fort, or if you're just, you know, concerned that there might be someone on your ship and you can't quite tell. They can't get everywhere, but they can at least kind of like aggro onto someone. And I think that very much in the same way as like someone's pet being on your ship and giving them away, affords you information that is not explicitly stated. Like it'll do its thing, and if you understand how skeletons work, you can kind of suss out what happens. But I like the fact that they go after enemy players. That's the intent. They're just mindless slaves going to murder whatever you tell them to go murder, right? Like they're effectively just doing whatever you want them to. So I'm fine with them sussing out lurkers, tuckers, because I think that tuckers are going to have to work a little bit harder than they really need to, especially given how harpoons are working right now. So much easier to be able to traverse areas and use a harpoon to get up somewhere where you normally wouldn't be able to get up to just by having like a rowboat with a harpoon on it, or sail by with your ship, harpoon rowboat or harpoon up somewhere, go up there and then let your ship sail off afterwards. Something like, you know, there's lots of ways to kind of work around this that I think that it's just going to take people understanding what the tools are and how to use them. And to not necessarily jump the gun on changing how the bone collar works because a few people are upset. Let's see some data. Let's see how things play out. Let's kind of see where the meta shifts before we start throwing the nerf bat at things, right? And there is a bunch of other stuff that I want to cover. This episode's kind of about at the time that I wanted to round it out. There is just one thing that I did want to let you know about ahead of time. So if you made it to the end of this episode, congrats. You get to hear about the Gilded Voyages returning. These are going to be from May 6th until the 23rd. And that all pirates will have access to up to 4 new single-use, time-limited Gilded Voyages of the Ancient Isles. They're effectively inviting you to go to get as much loot as you can. And if you sail for these, you're going to be able to get Sea Mark Tribute Tattoo. I don't know if this is Sea Mark from the comics, but if it is, I'm very happy about that because I think having Sea Mark actually come from the comics to the Sea of Thieves means Lissetti's crew maybe visiting for a little while, maybe DeMarco coming back. Who knows? I don't know. I'm hopeful, wishful thinking at this point, but I love that they are bringing back the Gilded Voyages. Those are always very good for the game. They always bring out a lot of players kind of hunting down other people for those. And they're always very lucrative, like they mentioned in the post. A good way to get get a lot of gold in a short amount of time outside of Golden Glory weekends. So very happy to see that. But Pirates, I think that's going to do it for this episode. Had a really good time talking about some of the new tools. Definitely looking forward to talking more about Season 12, the Plunder Pass, the cosmetics that we got into not only the Emporium, but into the shops. We'll cover all of that hopefully in next week's episode. Looking forward to hopefully getting Dread Pirate Doug back on the podcast at some point to talk about some stuff with him. And yeah, if you guys like this episode, definitely please consider liking, subscribing over on YouTube, sharing this with someone else, giving it a rating. Anything you can do to support this content always is appreciated, but never required. But I think that's going to do it for this episode. So I think that's it. All the contact information is in the show notes. So please head over to the show notes to take a look at those if you want to get in contact with me. Best way to do that, honestly, join the Discord server. It's the easiest way to touch base with me and many of the other pirates that are sailing the seas and looking for, if you have advice or questions, tons and tons, thousands upon thousands of hours of knowledge, all from some of the old salts of the game. So it's a great place to go and ask questions. Everyone's usually very, very helpful. Very little trolling, I would guess, in any of the conversations I've seen. So hopefully if you have any questions, concerns, comments, feel free to jump in there. We'll always try and field your questions as best as possible. Sometimes it just takes the right way to ask a question, but we'll get there in the end. Anyway, pirates, that's going to do it for this episode. So thank you. I love you. And I look forward to sailing with you on the Sea of Thieves.